Welcome to the 360T Podcast, a series that features top industry professionals offering unique insights regarding how the FX market is developing around us.
Hello, and welcome to the 360T Podcast with myself, Galen Stops. And I am delighted to be joined again by a friend of the podcast and my old colleague, Colin Lambert, the co-founder of The Full FX. Colin, thank you for joining me today.
Nice to talk to you again, Galen. And I'm looking forward to this, I have to say.
Me too. And I have to start with an apology to our listeners, which is we haven't done one of these podcasts in a little while. I don't have a good excuse beyond things got busy this year, which Colin and I will discuss in more detail. But my New Year's resolution for 2023 is to be more disciplined and get these out to you regularly, because we have had good feedback on these. With that said, we're going to jump right in. Colin, obviously you report every day on the foreign exchange market and all things FX related. So let's start off by reviewing what you think were some of the key themes or stories that broke this year. Let's go through your top three, shall we say. Themes or stories from 2022?
I think FX-wise, it was the BIS survey, which had a couple of surprises in it. The second theme would be volatility and how the markets have handled it. And I don't think we can have a conversation without talking about what happened in crypto this year, can we? Especially as some of this feeds into my predictions from last year, Galen, which I'm looking forward to reviewing.
Yeah, so we'll do the business stuff before we get to the candy, as they say. So we'll go through Colin's predictions after this. I will say some of the themes that we're going to discuss based on what you've just said will rub up against your predictions. So there might be some overlap here. So let's take these one by one. The BIS numbers, you said there were some surprises in there. Talk me through what you think were the key takeaways there and those surprises that you mentioned.
I mean, I think the biggest surprise was where the growth was. In fact, it was between reporting banks, reporting dealers. Now, I think we need to take a little bit of advice with that, because if you look at the reporting banks in most jurisdictions, there's 20 to 30 of them. And I think we can all agree that generally speaking, there are less than that in terms of truly global banks making everything. So some of those reporting dealers would be treated as customers by the top tier LPs. But the fact was that if you looked at where the dealing was being done, it was a huge amount. Most of the growth was between reporting dealers. Other financial institutions, such as hedge funds and asset managers, was flat to actually a small decline. So I think that was probably the biggest surprise, because I think, it feeds into the other theme of volatility. People want to hedge more. You know, they're taking on more risk, so they want to hold it in volatile times. Maybe they're clearing the risk quicker. So I thought that was the biggest surprise at where the trading was being done. What wasn't a surprise, and we discussed this in the podcast last year, was most of the growth was in swaps. And we're seeing interest rate divergence now. We're actually seeing proper swap pricing for people of a certain generation, i.e. old people like me. And to me, they were the two big themes. Yes, we know swaps are growing, but they were growing probably more than people thought. But actually, the customers were flat to slightly down.
So let's talk a couple of numbers then. The headline figure from the BIS, the total FX market, you were very specific. Arguably, one could say unnecessarily specific last year in
never,
your prediction.
Never.
in which you predicted that the headline figure was going to be 7.36 trillion. You were pretty close. You're pretty close. It was 7.5 trillion.
Yeah. I mean,
up from 6.6. So that's a jump.
Yeah. I mean, I'm claiming a victory on this one. I don't think we should be quibbling over $140 billion between friends.
Honestly, Colin, if you'd rounded up and just done 7.4, I might have given it to you. But the fact that you did two decimal places means that you know, you thought it was going to be there.
Yep. Fell on my own sword there. It's just a continuation of sometimes right, sometimes wrong, always certain.
But here's a question for you. So you predicted that number before we had kind of the outbreak of volatility, which caused a surge in volumes.
Yeah.
So therefore, given the volatility that we've seen that started before April of this year, are you actually surprised the final number isn't higher then?
No. I think there's a core amount of business that goes on in the market, and it was quite a significant leap. So to my mind, I must confess, I genuinely thought it was going to be about 7.4 trillion. It's my own stupid fault for going for an exact number, really, wasn't it? I could have got the victory. but I think if you look to what was happening with the semi-annual reports, and if you look at what's happening with the platforms, that growth was kind of projected. What I think is interesting is what's happened since then. it will be quite interesting to see the first round of, you know, local FX committee data when it comes out in January to see whether they've gone up from April. So it'd be the October data, whether it actually went up in October from April, because my sense is that things are starting to calm down. I reckon we're still around 7.5 trillion now, to be honest.
So before this episode, I went back and listened to our podcast from this time last year and listened to some of your BIS predictions. FX swaps, you got, yawn. Growth in Asia, yawn. I think one of the more interesting ones you said, which is you said to look at the FX options numbers. And you said that if they are the same or lower, this will show that regulation is having an impact and that you suspect activity will move towards the listed space. And FX options were, I'm going to double check this, but I believe they were 2% up. Yes, it was 304 billion a day, up from 298 billion per day. So basically flat.
Yes. I think I was right and wrong.
Okay. Explain.
It was flat, which I think I kind of predicted in the podcast last year.
You were fumbling your way towards that, yes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I'm just not sure we've actually seen the bump in listed yet. That's the thing about it. And again, this could be a matter of timing, because I think only now do you start hearing people talk about, oh, there's actually more going on in options than there was. I think previously people were still worried about paying big premium because they were saying, well, I'm going to pay premium to hedge this over 3 months. The market could die in the next week and I'm sitting there, I paid all this premium for nothing. Now that we've had sustained volatility, maybe we are seeing more activity in options. I mean, I think there is going to be more listed activity in options, but I think there's still a finite limit. I mean, if you go back many, many years, you and I would discuss NDFs and it would be, okay, oh, NDFs is the big growth story. And there's still people chasing that NDF growth story. I look at the numbers and go, well, actually, is it really growing? You know, the platform data, yes, it's growing. You know, 360 volumes are growing, but they're not growing anywhere near the pace FX swaps are, for instance. So I think options is kind of the same thing. I think there's a natural ceiling on the volume that we're going to see in options unless we get a real blowout.
And speaking of NDFs, I mean, the BIS don't break out the NDF numbers from outright forwards. We did see some growth in the outright forward space. It's 16.5%, so still growing at a good clip. Last time, the BIS subsequently, in a different report, broke out the NDF numbers and did some analysis on them. Were that to happen again, do you get the sense that the NDF market has grown at sort of a similar clip of 16.5%, or do you think the outright forwards, like the actual outright forwards, are driving that?
But I think it's probably half and half. I don't think there's any doubt that NDF volumes have grown over the 3 years significantly. And it could be, it could easily be 10%. It could be slightly north of that. But I also think that, you know, alongside the fact that people weren't using options, what they were using instead of options to hedge their positions was outright forwards. It's the ideal way to hedge your, you know, exchange rate and interest rate risk if you've got a, you know, a fixed number and you know when you're going to be making your payments. So I suspect that the increased volatility gave us some outright forward growth. But over the 3 years, there's no doubt NDFs have climbed. Look at the platform data, look at the semi-annual data. It's on a growth path. It's just the last couple of surveys, it's kind of flattened out.
Let's talk about your second theme then, which was volatility returning to the FX market. Obviously, in recent years, we've seen a number of market events, so to speak, which have caused a spike in FX volatility. A case in point of this is the outbreak of the pandemic. Market spreads blew out, markets went crazy for a minute. We saw intense volatility. But then it all subsided again quite quickly. Spreads compressed, people adapted to the new conditions, etc. This year, it's been different. And is that purely a function of monetary policy?
Yes. Yep. Okay. Listen up, children. Uncle Colin's going to tell you a story from the old days. I mean, if you think about it, for the first time in a decade, we've now got interest rate differentials. You know, what happened in dollar yen? Okay, I know the BOJ intervened and knocked it down, and people saying, oh, what a great job they did. Actually, what happened was they timed it brilliantly when the dollar was near a peak. But what we actually saw this year was, well, hang on a second, dollar yen, there's an interest rate differential here of like 3-4%. I'm going to take advantage of that. The carry trade is back. There's a whole bunch of asset managers out there that hedge their FX portfolios if they have a carry trade, which they haven't had for many, many years now. So yeah, this sustained volatility, and it's interesting how you define volatility, isn't it? Because what we're talking about is a regular move. And the regular moves are being caused 100% by monetary policy. There's the spikes every now and again. To your point, yes, we get the odd event still. But the underlying fact is, if you look around the interest rates of the world, there's money to be earned there. And that naturally breeds foreign exchange volume. So we're kind of going back to where we were, I guess, pre-2008.
So let's talk about crypto then. Obviously, it has not been a stellar year for crypto. We are facing another crypto winter, it seems. Crypto has weathered crypto winters before. What's your kind of high-level take on what we're seeing now?
I think worse is to come. I think the problem we have is that if you look at all the arguments for Bitcoin over the years, and we won't go into them again because everyone knows them, they've all been effectively refuted one by one over the past year to 18 months. And probably the last and big one was, oh, let's all use Bitcoin because it's not regulated. And all of a sudden, everyone's going like, no, no, we need regulation. Please regulate us. So where's the differentiator here? All of a sudden, what is it apart from just a number on a screen that people are trading? And I think the biggest problem for crypto and Bitcoin in particular is it stopped moving. The incentive to trade now is minimal. You've got $500 ranges on the day. And depending on where you're trading, you know, you're talking of just a few spreads. So I think there's a real challenge there in terms of it stopped moving. The only people left holding Bitcoin are the ones that either bought it a lot lower down or bought it a lot higher up and going like, well, I'm blown out the water anyway. You know, retail's famously been carried out. There's an air of distrust around the whole industry, which I think will take some time to clear up. And that to me is a real threat. Don't get me wrong. I still believe that there are really good use cases for the technology. And so that crypto Web3 type stuff is still going to be around. But I honestly cannot see this being the new shiny toy, the next big thing anymore.
One of the things that struck me, we've had the collapse of Three Arrows Capital and FTX and the contagion that both of those unleashed separately that caused some other firms to go under. Both instances, this was good old-fashioned traditional financial services problems we've seen before. In the 3AC, it was over-leverage when risky bets went bad. And in the FTX case, it was alleged mishandling of customer funds. And it seems like poor governance.
Yep, you're 100% right. The only thing I would add to that, though, is I do believe that this whole thing came to a head because the price of Bitcoin collapsed. That was the house of cards that was holding everything up. The fact that we still had price inflation, there were still people buying, they were still attracting customers to the product that was Bitcoin and Ether and everything else. And all of a sudden, they're going, actually, I want my money back. Oops. Effectively, yes, they were really badly managed. But the premise of all these businesses was the price is never going to go down. They believe these people were saying, oh, Bitcoin's going to be at $250,000 in the next year and stuff like that. And I think most of us knew that was unrealistic. Maybe we didn't see it dropping by 3/4, but I think that's what exacerbated the whole problems and brought them to light. They maybe would have come to light at some stage in future years. It was quite a spectacular blip in the price and in these firms.
So having gone through those kind of key themes and stories, let's turn to your predictions. Now, last year, I asked you for your nailed-on, definitely going to happen predictions, and then your wildcard predictions. So let's take these one by one. So your nailed-on predictions, your number one was, and I believe I made fun of you for this being a bit of an easy one, was fintech, M&A, and consolidation.
Well, hang on. You asked me for nailed-on. It's going to be a tap-in. Yes, it was a tap-in. Yes, we have seen some of it. Yes, it was inevitable. I think it's interesting when you see firms like Quantile and Cobalt being acquired by other firms. There's probably very different reasons behind why these deals are taking place. But I think the very fact that, you know, you've got firms with a good idea that have been around for some time and they've got a good business, they're now being snapped up. Because I think what we're realizing now, and again, this kind of feeds into the crypto theme in a way, what we're realizing now is if you actually really want to make a success of these things, you need scale.
Yeah.
Great ideas are great ideas, but you've got to have scale. And I think that's why we're seeing these deals start to increase in number.
Then your second tap in was there's going to be a focus on ESG, environmental, social and governance concerns kind of coming into the FX space. Obviously, that's been a huge story in financial markets broadly in recent years. Would you say that your prediction has borne out over the last year?
Probably not, if I'm being honest. I mean, yes, there's lots of people talking about ESG, but I think FX has just been a small part of the big overall. I thought we might see more sort of green FX derivative type stuff and contracts linked to performance. We haven't really. I mean, they're there, but I don't think it's actually grown any. So I think you can put me down for a red X for that one, I think, Galen.
I would say this. I think it's just the time horizon that you're wrong on. I still think it is an inevitability. I still think, frankly, people are trying to figure out what ESG means in financial and FX context. You know, there's sort of been some concerns now about greenwashing and are some of these firms that claim to be ESG investing really living up to it? There's not always necessarily clearly defined standards on what constitutes ESG investing or what it means for different asset classes in different ways. But I do think eventually it will come to FX. I think it'll be interesting to see if it becomes part of the FX Global Code of Conduct down the line.
Well, I think that's one area that the Global Foreign Exchange Committee are looking at as they're trying to raise their buy side into participation in the Global Code. They are definitely pushing, well, actually, the G can very much be covered by adherence to the FX Global Code along with other codes of conduct. Yeah. So 100% that will happen. Yeah, you're probably right. It's a timing issue. I think it will happen. It was a tap in 1 year. Just sadly for me, it wasn't 2022, I don't think.
And then your last prediction was this year we discover how disruptive regulation will be to FX. We've had SA-CCR, UMR, Basel, etc. And you predict the outcome of this would be not necessarily a liquidity challenge, but the rush to zero spread could reverse. We could see either wider spreads or demand for more listed products.
Hmm. Again, this could be a bit of a timing issue because I think there is a bit of demand for listed products, but I don't think it's actually hit properly yet because I do think like some of the compression services are doing a pretty good job, but it's been an uneven. If you look at SA-CCR, I mean, it's fairly obvious to everyone that looks at it. And there's, I think there's been some research on this from one of the central banks also that the different approaches to SA-CCR mean banks in different jurisdictions are impacted differently. Therefore, some are not competitive in certain FX swap products in certain periods. And others are. So have we seen wider spreads? We've seen naturally wider spreads because interest rate differentials have blown out. But I do think there's an element of people are more aware of the capital impacts of their business than ever before. And I suspect this could be why we actually saw some customer flows go down in FX swaps in the BIS survey, because a lot of the banks going like, well, actually, this is pretty capital intensive for me and I can't price you as tight as I used to. Whereas when they're trading with each other, huge collateral in place, they can cross margin a little much easier. They can net off a lot easier. So I think we're still learning about the impact of that regulation, and the impact will not happen over 3 months since SA-CCR came in, but it's definitely started this year. And I think it'll continue into 2023.
So that was a long-winded way of saying you got that one wrong too.
No, I'm claiming a W on that one. I mean, we found out it was fairly disruptive.
I think I'm going to copy and paste your last two predictions from last year and just stick them in at the end of this podcast, because it sounds like you'll be making the same ones in 2023. Interestingly, your wildcard predictions, by contrast, actually did excellently this year,
which was
a shock to everyone involved. So you predicted that there would be a shakeup in PB and that some of them would either trim existing business or exit the business. So according to the BIS data, prime brokered FX trading volumes declined 11.5% in the last survey compared to 2019. So, I mean, we can't prove it will happen this year, but given what we've seen in the news reports, that sounds like you got that one right.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's because, you know, there, again, it's the capital impact of the PB. You know, if you're a PB who, for instance, has quite a heavy client base around derivatives, then the cost of that PB business has skyrocketed compared to the traditional spot business. So I think there's an element of that. I think they're being more careful with the customers they're taking on. They're looking at the value. There's more of an interest on value. But then equally, you look at firms like Hidden Road have come in to PB. So there's still firms coming in different ways. So I just think it's a bit of a change in the landscape. But I'm definitely claiming that W, Galen.
You mentioned firms coming in. Do you see then the trend continuing, or will PB volumes flatten out? What do you see happening next year?
I think to a degree they'll flatten out, because I think they're now understanding a part of the decline could be that there was concern over the impact on the capital situation from their PB business. They now understand that now that the rules are fully in place. There'll be a few trimming here and there, But overall, I suspect that where we are now is probably where we'll be for next year. And the growth will come in. Are funds genuinely interested in getting back into FX, for instance? And do they want to come in via a PB? Do they go listed? Certain types of funds will go listed. One thing I would say is that, you know, if you look at it over the course of the last year, if you look at the volume numbers that we can see, there's no real trend towards listed in FX still. There's a healthy amount of volume being done every day across the various exchanges around the world, but actually it's not necessarily growing to any degree the way the cash markets have done.
Prediction number two on your wildcards was a stablecoin blow up.
Luna, baby, Luna.
I know, and I was going to give you this, but then there was a sentence you uttered after this prediction, which is, I'm paraphrasing very lightly here. It's a house of cards. So far, so good. Crypto will rebound stronger and better.
I think you may have impersonated me and put that comment in there. I didn't trust some of the stablecoins. You know, they did blow up. There was contagion, as we've discussed. So, yeah, I think it's right. The only thing I would say is I think this is kind of what we spoke about earlier. The crypto industry should come back stronger from these events. And it probably does need regulation. I'm not sure the price of crypto comes back. But actually, if you look at what they're offering in terms of technology and stablecoins as maybe the basis for CBDCs, I think it comes back. Not sure when it comes back.
Is it a transparency issue as well? Because a lot of what we're seeing, we talked about governance before, but it's also a lack of transparency. People couldn't see, for example, how FTX was operating, the relationship between it and Alameda wasn't clear. And that's the issue with some of these stablecoins, which is, do we have full transparency on the reserves, how it's being managed, how it functions, etc.?
We don't. You know, you look at exchanges holding customer assets. Yeah, they say, oh, these are liquid assets. But they don't say how many of them are actually their assets and how many are customer assets. This is what I said earlier about the lack of trust. Yeah, you know, there's a real trust problem in that whole industry. So yes, stablecoin blow up, absolutely. Wasn't surprised by that. Probably shouldn't have uttered that second line.
I know, you were doing
I've given you an opening. I can't believe I've done this, but I've given you an opening.
Well, that's fine, because your third wild card was trend following was going to be back big time, that the SG trend index was going to end up double figures. And I had a look just before we came on this podcast. And Colin, the trend was your friend in 2022. Yep. Can you tell listeners where the SG trend index is going to end the year?
Plus 25.45%.
That puts you very much with a green tick next to that prediction.
Yes. And to be honest, again, but that was related to the fact I thought, you know, interest rate divergence, as I think I explained last year. This stuff creates trends. And if you're a half decent trader, then you're going to jump on the trend. And if you're a trend follower by nature, you've got to be on this stuff. And they were. And well done to everyone on that one. I mean, 25%, I think most of us would take that. I think it's the highest the SG index has been since inception in 2000.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I've been waiting for that one, this whole podcast.
Okay.
Trend following. Never doubt me, Galen. I always told you it was a good thing.
Well, let's bring you back down to earth then by discussing your trade of the year. Can you remind listeners what your trade of the year was? And then let's check in on how it's doing.
Well, I bought Aussie Check at 15.91 because I thought in the obscure logic, I think I said something about rare earth minerals or something. At one stage, it was at 17.5, so like 9% higher. And in the last 2 months, it's given up some of those gains.
Can we put a number on those losses?
Yeah, basically it's dropped 12.5% in the last 2 months. So I'm now minus, I think I'd close it out at like 15.30, so it's minus 3.8%. But you know what? I didn't realize how badly Shekel Mex went last year. This is under half the losses I had last year. This is an improvement. This is an uptrend.
Okay, so let's talk about 2023 and the year ahead.
Okay.
What are your big predictions for the year ahead? Things we should be watching for. You did pretty well in 2022. So let's see if we can top that in 2023.
I don't think we can. I think this year is going to be a year of consolidation in many ways. So picking out clear trends. I mean, what I would say is things that I think will happen. I think guaranteed FX swaps automation will accelerate. I think this is a year we've got better data. We've got more opportunities to trade it. more people are aware because we now have proper spreads and proper values in and interest rate differentials. I think more customers can be aware of their FX swap trading than maybe they were over the past couple of years when things were pretty flat. So I suspect that they would like to put their LPs into more competition. And that means automation. So I suspect that the FX swaps automation will accelerate. I think that's my tap in, for want of a better word. I think the other one is we'll continue to hear noise about CBDCs, but I'm not convinced we're going to be any closer at the end of 2023 than we are now to actually having a major central bank launch a CBDC. I suspect it's going to be a year of, much like the BIS with a settlement risk, in 2019, they made a big splash with it. Their 2022 report is, yeah, things are pretty much the same. And I think what we'll see is CBDCs will be tested ad nauseum, but nothing will actually happen on that one. And the third one, I think AI is going to be a big thing in improving workflows. There'll be more robotics involved. And I think it will also creep into trading. So I think they will be three things I would look at as definitely going to happen this year. And as I proved last year, this means they probably won't.
Any wildcard predictions to layer on top of those?
Okay. Yeah, of course. Of course. It's a bit like a stopped watch again, unfortunately. I predict this one a bit before. And this might be towards the end of next year. But I actually think we're going to see a reasonable growth in clearing of FX swaps. I think a lot of things we've been talking about today will lead back to one thing, and that is more reporting dealers trading with each other, more capital requirements. I suspect that we will end up with more clearing of FX swaps. I mean, at the moment, it's relatively negligible. But I think in the major currencies between major players, we will see a real significant move in clearing of FX swaps. I think my second one would be one of the mainstream FX trading platforms, and I mean institutional, not on the retail side of it, will go 24/7 in FX. And they'll actually support weekend trading with proper LPs and proper clients on the platform. So someone like, you know, I'm not saying you guys will do it, obviously, but you or one of your peers, my wildcard would be one of those will actually go, you know what, let's look at 24/7 FX trading. And I think my third one, and you'll love this one, because I think this is another one that started predicting in 2003. I actually think there'll be one or two deals in the FX platform world. I think there's still more deals to be done.
Yeah, that is one I've heard before from you, Colin.
Several times, Galen. But I actually think there's a few platforms out there that have, you know, they come up with a different idea. And the idea is going to, well, to go back to my earlier point about fintechs, they need to scale. And I suspect that what will happen is you'll see these platforms, one or two might be nabbed just to scale the business. Could be incorporated into a business. But I think if they've got enough clients on there, we've shown how difficult it is to get clients moving between platforms. So maybe it does become easier to actually just take the platform.
And so to wrap up the podcast, Colin, you've been a little bit, shall we say, unlucky with your trades of the year the past 2 years. But fortunately for you, it's redemption time now. Like a phoenix rising from the ashes.
Yep.
It's time for you to come up with our nailed on trade of the year. Colin, what is your 2023 trade of the year?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say thank you to everyone that did support the trade of the year, including the numerous people that actually had AussieCheck as their password. Now, it's good online practice to change your password on a regular basis. So your new password for 2023, everyone, can be Chili Gnocchi.
Okay, Chili Gnocchi. Talk us through the logic behind this one.
Yeah. As always, there's great logic here. I'm going to sell Chili Gnocchi.
Okay.
I quite like the idea of, you know, the Gnocchi as a commodity currency, you know, oil in particular.
Uh-huh.
And I think increasing interest rates will create pressure on some LATAM currencies. Obviously, I know nothing about Chile. I did look at doing the Argentinian peso, but I'm thinking,
oof.
That was just like fraught with danger on so many levels, especially when you're writing about it every week. And I'm talking RIC codes here. So really it was like, I think let's try and go a safer bet. So I'll sell Chili Gnocchi. I've just looked it up and the current market price is 1.1201.
1.1201. Okay. Well, we will come back a year from now, hopefully, Colin, and review both your trade of the year and your predictions. In the meantime, thank you so much, as always, for lending your insights, expertise, and shall we say logic to events in the FX market this year. Thank you very much, Colin.
Always great to talk to you, Galen. Have a great year.
And thank you very much to our listeners. Hopefully it won't be such a long break until our next podcast. And wishing you all a very happy and prosperous 2023.
Thank you for listening to the 360T podcast. Check the 360T website to catch up on past episodes and find new listings.